Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
I had a rough idea of the cabin I hoped to build. I wanted it small and simple and tight to the weather. I wanted it snug.
You're hearing the voice of Lou Urenick. He makes his living as a journalism professor at Boston University, but you could say he made, or maybe reclaimed his life, by building a cabin in the Maine woods. He tells the story of that salvation in his new book, Cabin: Two Brothers, a Dream, and 5 Acres in Maine. Lou Urenick is with us in the studio. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Well, Professor Urenick, your book is absolutely beautifully written. And before we get much deeper into the story, I was wondering if you might be able to give listeners a little bit more of a taste of what you've written in Cabin. Can you read a little more?
I'd be happy to. This would be something like a monk's cabin, or better, since I wanted to include books, binoculars, some magazines, and a sketch pad, a writer's cabin. The woods would be my diversion, and I would look forward to the drama of big snowfalls, noisy woodpeckers, new seasons emerging out of old ones, furtive pine marten, and summer thunderstorms. I thought of a deck officer's quarters on a sailing ship, a gentleman's space reduced to its Spartan essentials: desk, chair, chest, bunk, a wooden box with sextant, glass, and compass, a table for reading maps, and a few good books. Everything would fit together tightly, and anything loose would be stowed in its proper compartment against rough weather. I was building a cabin because I wanted to pare down and find the me that had been misplaced in life's big and little catastrophes of the last decade.
That's Lou Urenick reading from his new book, Cabin. Professor Urenick, the cabin that you describe in that passage, it sounds like every child's sort of dream treehouse, but in the Maine woods. But from what I understand, your desire to build it didn't come necessarily out of the sense of fulfilling a dream, but as you wrote there, to somehow pare down everything that had fallen around you in what you call life's little and big catastrophes. So what had happened to you that led you to the point where you wanted to put a hammer to wood and create something from nothing?
Well, I had come through a rough patch in my life. I had lost my mother. I was close to my mother, and it was a very difficult phase in my life, her death. I had lost a job. I had suffered some health problems. My health is good now. But at the time, it was a difficult period, and I felt myself slipping, I guess you could say, into a kind of depression. I think all of us go through these periods as we get older. Life has its ups and downs. And I definitely felt a shadow falling over my life. So I tried to get prescriptive with myself. I asked myself, you know, what do I need to do to kind of get out of the gloom and give me a handle on a better way? And so I had always loved the outdoors. I liked building things. And I settled on a cabin as the project that would be my project to get me to look forward.
I have to say, you're being wonderfully humble here in the studio, because in the opening chapter of your book, when you described your health problems, I mean, you were at Massachusetts General Hospital hooked up to a heart monitor because you had extraordinarily irregular heartbeat for days.
Yes. Well, you know, at least it wasn't a heart attack. I was in the supermarket in Brookline, and I had that feeling of a bird fluttering in my chest. People who have experienced this know what that's like. And I thought I was having a heart attack. Thank God I did not. I had something called atrial fibrillation, which can be treated. It's not a problem if it's correctly treated, and I got very good medical care. But while I lay there in the bed at Mass General looking out, you know, over onto the Charles River, I had a lot of time to think about my life and what I wanted to do with it. And I had lots of good memories from my childhood of being outdoors, of fishing and being in the woods and so forth. And I thought, you know, now is the time. It is a child's dream, really, to have a cabin. But it was a dream that kept coming back to me. And I thought, well, now is the time for me to do it.
Well, and as you write, that dream was, or the realization was so profound that when you told yourself, you know, it's time to build yourself a home, as you write, your heart rate normalized.
Exactly. Amazing. I was strapped and ready to go for something called cardioversion, in which the doctors apply these big electric paddles to your chest and, you know, your heart stops and they sit there and they wait for it to start beating evenly again. And fortunately, I did not have to go through that. It seemed to be a kind of mind-body connection. I was thinking about the cabin and I went back to a regular heartbeat.
So what was it? I mean, I want to explore this in much more detail as we unfold the story of the actual construction of the cabin. But what do you think it was at that moment that made the idea of building your own home in particular, not just a cabin, but your own home, so calming? It gave you what seemed like an instant sense of peace.
Right, right. Well, there was the nature, of course, and there was the prospect of building it with my brother, which I will say more about. That became an important part of the story. But I also have to say that as a child, I moved around an awful lot. Got a lot of love as a child, had a very good mother, but we lived a kind of gypsy life. We lived probably in 20 different places before I had gone off to college, and we went from apartment to small house to rented apartment, and we never really settled in one place. So I always had this hankering for home, a place that I could call my own, a place that I could escape to. And the cabin, the idea of a cabin, touched that chord in me, a place that I could always return to and where my children could return to and my brother and his children could return to. Very powerful feeling inside of me.
And why is it that it mattered to you that you and your brother built it with your own hands? You could have just gone up to Maine and bought something that was already there.
Right. Well, it's a great experience working with another person, especially somebody who you care about, you know, a brother in this case. There are long periods of silence. There's lots of opportunity to talk about important things. It gave us really good time together. And it's, you know, it's a gift. It's not often in your 50s, as I am, to be able to spend a year with your brother. And so it allowed us to affirm what had always been a good relationship, with its ups and downs, of course. But we had been separated. I had pursued a career in another part of the country. I was apart from him for a while. So this was an opportunity to reconnect with my brother, to talk about some important things that needed discussion. And we did all of that. And it was a gift.
Well, I'm going to ask you a little bit more about your brother because he seems to be quite a fellow.
He's a character, yes, right.
Before I get there, I do want to just remind our listeners that they are absolutely welcome to join this conversation. We're speaking with Lou Jurenik. He is a journalism professor at Boston University and author of the new memoir, Cabin, Two Brothers, a Dream, and 5 Acres in Maine. And we're talking about why people build things and what it gives to their lives when they put their hands to work and how that maybe helps heal their lives. So listeners, I have a couple questions for you. Have you felt at peace holding a hammer in your hand or maybe sensed some salvation in a flurry of sawdust? And what is it about using our hands and building things on our own or with a small group of people, with family, that really clears away all the mental and emotional clutter in our lives? I'd love to hear your stories, metaphorical or real, about building your very own cabin in the woods. Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Professor Jurenik, we talked just a little bit about your brother. I'm going to hold that for another moment.
Sure.
Just teasing listeners a little bit.
And by the way, please call me Lou.
Okay, Lou. tell me a little bit about the location in Maine where you chose to build the cabin.
It's in far western Maine, in the hill country of western Maine, Oxford County. It's an absolutely beautiful part of a beautiful state. It is maybe 15 miles east of the New Hampshire border at the edge of the White Mountain National Forest. It's a place of rivers and streams, rolling hills. It's old agricultural country that has grown back into second growth forest, small towns. I'd place it between Freiburg and Bethel. And the cabin itself occupies a hillside. A northeasterly facing hillside, looks down on a beaver pond, and it's about maybe a mile from Kezar Lake, for those who know Maine.
And when you first got there, how did you know that that was the spot?
Well, I had been looking, and Paul and I went up together in the winter. We strapped on some snowshoes and climbed the hill. It was about 2 feet of snow. And right away, I was engaged and in love with the place. There was a set of bobcat tracks that were wending their way up the hillside following the tracks of a snowshoe hare. And I was completely absorbed in the story that these tracks were telling and having a lot of fun following them. And so I knew this was the place for me.
Mm.
Yes. Right.
Well, so we've mentioned Paul a couple of times. Mm-hmm. And the way you write about him in the book is I've never met him, but I absolutely could see him.
He's a great guy.
He's in construction.
He builds big things. You know, a cabin is like a toy chest for Paul. Typically, when he's building something, cranes and concrete trucks and even barges are involved. So a cabin, you know, is a miniature for him.
He's quite a big guy. You describe him as being sort of, he lives in a suburban part of, I guess, Portland.
That's correct.
Portland, Maine.
Yes, right.
But he's the guy. He's the neighbor down the street with the huge Harley firing up
exactly.
The motor just to rile up his neighbors.
Absolutely. He's got a big Harley Softail, which is his passion. And when suburban life gets to be too much for Paul, he puts on his leather vest and gets on the Harley and takes off. And when that thing starts, you can hear it, you can feel it reverberating in your chest. But he's a very good builder, and I could not have done it in the way that I did it without him.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, we didn't just build a cabin. It was a real labor of love. For example, we framed the cabin in the old traditional colonial method of post and beam construction. We tried to do it without nails. We fastened the big posts and beams together with mortises and tenons, not unlike a piece of furniture, really. And we did similarly with the rafters. And so the inside of the cabin shows this gorgeous frame. And then we put on a siding of native white pine. And I scrounged a lot of materials for the cabin. I got the windows, for example, for nothing. Somebody just wanted them hauled away, and they're great windows, 10 over 12 windows, old colonial-type windows. And they needed modifications in order to fit in the cabin, and Paul was able to, you know, cleverly figure out how to modify them and fit them into the cabin with a skill saw. And it was really funny in a way. I'm a writer. I'm used to revising things. I was constantly making changes to the cabin as it went up, and it was driving Paul completely out of his mind. He likes to have everything settled with a set of blueprints. You know, I had a sketch, a rough sketch, and a cardboard model, and that was about it. And I was revising as we went along, and I thought I was going to lose him a couple of times, but he stayed with the project.
You know, when reading your book, I mean, there's clearly this thread of a lot of sort of unfortunate events had led you to this mm-hmm. point in your life,
right.
And that, you know, standing there looking back at what had drawn you to this moment, you found that there were echoes of your past that kept
right.
coming up
right.
in as you wanted to build this cabin. And I feel like that's one of the reasons why so many people, when they're doing something that they feel compelled to do, they don't really know why, but then they're able to see
sure.
there are reasons. And
right.
one of the big reasons that you said, for example, you were mentioning how you were salvaging old materials. Well, some of the most important materials that you attempted to salvage actually came from the first house
yes.
that you had built.
Right.
You know, many years
30 some years ago,
in your
right?
past with your first wife,
right? Exactly, mm-hmm. right. Paul and I had built a house back in 30 some years ago, and it was a post and beam cape, very traditional home, cedar shingles and so forth, and I had taken some trees down from that property and had them sawn into beams and rafters and so forth without a clear idea of what I would ever do with them. Sadly, that marriage came apart, but I held on to the lumber.
Well, you held on to it in part because at that time, even though you said your marriage was falling apart,
I had some sense that I would do something with this. I wasn't clear what, but I had an impulse toward home and toward lumber, that's for
and
sure.
You wanted to build a little mini Kennedy-esque compound future grandchildren.
Yeah, a little family retreat that had always been a dream, you know, where there would be a main cabin and small cabins around it, and the kids would run down to the pond. I think I had seen that in a movie somewhere. And So I saved this lumber. I put it in Paul's backyard, believe it or not, and it stayed there for a decade. And when the time came to build the cabin, we went back to that lumber and sorted it and found the good pieces. Now, you know, Paul made the sensible suggestion that we just throw it all away and buy a stack of new 2x4s, which I suppose would have been the efficient way of doing it. But I was determined to make a cabin out of these old beams. It gave me a sense of connection with the past, and I also knew that it would produce a really lovely structure.
So
we did it.
One of the words that you use, I mean, you're a professor of journalism, so you know, like, when we do segments like this or write books or even stories, we're always looking for the big themes that resonate. And for me, you know, if I had to put words to some of the things that resonated here in your book, I would say shelter, healing, coherence. That's a word that you use in particular, that being able to use these physical remnants of your past lives. In the construction of this new cabin with your brother lent you a sense of coherence and sense in your life that you didn't have before.
That's right. I was trying to knit, you know, little pieces of the past together into something here that was coherent. It occurs to me now it's a little bit like a bird picking up this and that to make a nest, you know, a little piece of rag here and some twigs there and some mud from there. It is something that has dogged me through my life, this sense of lacking in coherence, and I'm always reaching for it. And the cabin, by fitting these materials from the past together into something I would use in the future, was bringing the past forward and giving me at some level the kind of coherence that I had craved.
Well, listeners, I'm speaking with Lou Jurenik. His new memoir is Cabin, Two Brothers, A Dream, and 5 Acres in Maine. We're talking about things like coherence, and why is it that we feel drawn to build things with our own two hands, maybe at a time where everything else is falling apart. We're at 1-800-423-8255, and Lou Jurenik, we've got a lot of callers who have their own stories to share with us.
I'm eager to hear them.
So
this is wonderful.
Let's bring some of them in. Jason's calling from Leominster. You're on the air, Jason.
Hi, thank you. Lou, it sounds really interesting. I really look forward to hopefully reading the book very soon.
Great.
I want to share my kind of story of, you know, after my dad had passed away, he'd been a sailor and very fond of boats. I kind of, you know, went down the path of trying to build a small sailing dinghy.
Yes.
And, you know, it was a great experience of, you know, some of the things you described about, you know, the fulfillment. But I was curious, you know, for me, I was able to get to that point where I was able to christen the boat and, you know, actually raise the sail. And you know, I'm wondering if you had a kind of a moment in building the cabin when you felt, you know, finally, you know, whether it was just the framing or when you finally completed it, that you said, you know, we've, you know, arrived or something. Just curious on that.
Yeah, 2 points. The frame was the favorite part of the cabin for me. I loved looking at that frame. I liked making that frame. And when the frame was complete, I felt great satisfaction. In fact, that was the first night I spent in the cabin. There was no roof on it, just a frame. And I spread the sleeping bag down on the deck and just completely enjoyed it on one April night. The second point, even a greater thrill, was, and this is the story I tell in the final chapter, I don't want to give it all away, but we had a Thanksgiving dinner. The first really gathering of the family at the cabin was a big Thanksgiving dinner, and it was really the beginning of life in the cabin for all of us.
Jason, can I ask you a quick question about you and the boat that you built? You said that you did it with your father in mind. Would you have felt the same way doing anything else, or was there something in particular about building the boat that you felt was the right thing to do?
You know, it's something that I guess I had always been interested in. And, you know, especially after my dad had passed away, it was something that almost was, you know, a way for me to connect with him, in that I think that was the greatest loss at the time, was, you know, not being able to connect with him any longer. So it kind of provided me that time when I was working on the boat to have that, you know, real close connection, for lack of a better description. I don't know if that really answers it, but that was kind of part of the motivation and, you know, really the fulfillment in the end of, you know, actually going through the whole process. And then, obviously, once it was, you know, I had the end result, it was kind of a, wow, I can't believe I was able to actually do that type of thing. So you know, it was great in that way.
Jason, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say congratulations. It's no small thing to build a boat. I think building a boat is far more difficult than building a cabin. You've got to cut all those curves and camphors and so forth. That's hard stuff.
Jason, thank you so much for your call. I'm going to get a couple other people in here. Donna is calling from Ashland. You're on the air, Donna.
Hello, thank you for having me. Lou, I just want to say that the cabin and both the cabin and the book sound fascinating, and I can't relate to having a hammer in my hand, but I'd like to, like, compare it to what knitting needles
do
for me
today.
And just holding the needles can reduce stress, make me feel better. I'd also say the cooking. So doing things with your hands and having an outcome that brings you pleasure, I just totally get where you're going. Your cabin sounds fascinating.
Thank you. You know, the physicality of doing something takes us out of our heads. You know, most of us have jobs now where we're pushing paper and tapping on keyboards, and it's nice to take something that has, you know, a physical materiality to it and to make something and to see progress.
Donna, thank you so much for your call, because you bring up exactly one of the points which I was very moved by in the book, Lou, because I'm always like at home trying to constantly do tiny projects here and there, nothing on the scale of building a cabin in the woods. But there's something about, you know, in a way, as you were saying, we're pushing paper around all day. We live lives of such strange isolation, no matter how connected we are, that somehow it feels like in order to really break through that isolation, we got to reach out and physically touch something.
Right. Yes.
And I wonder if is that something that's sort of ebbing away as a possibility in our daily lives? Not all of us can go up into the woods and build a cabin from the ground up.
Yeah, sadly, I think it is. I think that there is, you know, we're not doing physical labor, most of us, in the way that we used to. And perhaps even more profoundly, nature is not so firmly fixed in the center of our lives the way it once was. And I know for myself, and probably for many others, you know, nature is an essential part of my mental health. If I'm not out there in the woods from time to time and looking at the trees or staring at the lake, whatever it, you know, the setting happens to be, I just don't feel as well. So we're losing both the physicality of, you know, of using our bodies, and there is this slow ebbing of nature as well.
Do you see yourself as part of what seems to be a particularly New England tradition of going, you know, into nature? Not to say that this doesn't happen elsewhere, but there's just so many well-known examples of going into nature, building a structure, not at the expense of nature, actually, and quite trying to be in harmony with it and finding sublime solitude.
Yeah. Well, of course, there's a long tradition, you know, going back to our former neighbor, Henry Thoreau, in Concord. Quick, funny story. I told my friend Justin Kaplan I was working on a book about building a cabin in the woods, and he says, you know, that's been done before. I didn't go into the woods for the reasons that Henry Thoreau did. I was twice his age, and I was trying to achieve something else. But that's a book that I've drawn a lot of inspiration from in my life. I first read that book when I was in high school, and I returned to it frequently. Yes, it isn't, you know, this idea of building, of simplicity, of frugality. You know, these are important New England traditions. We can be very proud of them. And they still exist in many parts of New England. Certainly they do in the remote parts of Maine, especially western Maine. And it's a tradition that we should be proud of, and I think we should cultivate.
Lou, we just have about a minute or so to go, and I want to leave listeners with one of the most, I felt, very lovely stories in the book. And it returns to the question of you and your brother, Paul. And there's a moment in the book where you are basically telling, you know, he had great difficulty in his life with a small child.
Right.
You were in the middle of your divorce, and you weren't there for him when his child was suffering. And you talked about it. Can you just briefly, we got just a minute to go, tell us what happened and why that conversation couldn't have happened anywhere else but at the construction of this cabin?
You know, Paul and I have been close, but there was a period of my life when I was distracted by other things, and he was having problems in his life. He had an infant son who was in very serious health trouble, and I was not there for Paul in the way that I should have been at that time, and I sincerely regret it. Building the cabin gave us the time together. It allowed me to apologize for that. We had a quiet conversation about it. Paul being Paul, said, hey, you know, not to worry. These things happen in life. You know, don't sweat it, brother. But it was important for me to say it and to have him acknowledge it. And it may not have happened had we not had that time together at the cabin.
Well, Lou Urenick, author of Cabin, Two Brothers, A Dream, and 5 Acres in Maine, it's been a real pleasure speaking with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, we'll be back after a short break. Up next, multimedia artist and musician Laurie Anderson. Stay with us. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.